Welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon, and today I'm joined by a very special guest, a man who has an extraordinary resume. We're not going to go into all of it, but he has his own radio show. He's called The Liberty Man, Mr. John Moore, and he introduced extraordinary intel earlier this week that we shared with you, and he joins us now to provide more context and more updates about that really bombshell intel that could be a pointer toward escalation of World War III. Mr. John Moore, sir, welcome to the show. I'm always honored to have you on. Thank you for your service and everything that you've done for us in the past and in the present day. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Mike. It's good to be with you as always. As I like to tell people, when I started my radio show in 1995, I decided it would become a private intelligence service for myself. I've been an investigator most of my adult life. Now I'm an investigative journalist. I've developed many private sources over the years, over the decades. But 4 weeks ago, one of my private sources told me about the F-16s being taken out of mothballs at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, Tucson, Arizona, and flying out of there, dozens of them. We didn't know where they were going. Update a week ago today, I found out it's not just F-16s, but it's also C-130s, AWACS, A-10s, other aircraft. And we now know where they're going. They're going to the Philippines and to Europe, most likely Poland, we don't know, but Europe. A week ago today, I had my monthly John Moore Show meetup, and one of our attendees used to do maintenance on C-130s and A-10s and so forth. And I asked him, I said, how long does it take and what does it cost to put a C-130 back into active service? It's been mothballed. He says, John, it's a team of 260 men and women. It takes about 3 weeks, and it costs about $1 million for one aircraft to be put back in service. Now, you multiply that times hundreds of other aircraft, and you're looking at some very serious money, to say the least. An additional complexity, Mike, is the active duty Air Force doesn't have the pilots to fly these aircraft, or do they have the people to do the maintenance? So they're going to be taking people that have been retired. I don't know the percentage, but about half the commercial airline pilots are retired Air Force pilots. They'll be brought back. They won't particularly like it, at least most won't. And the same thing with mechanics. Retired Air Force mechanics and men and women who are in the Air Force Reserve will be brought back on active duty to service these aircraft that have been brought back into service.
So hold on, if you don't mind me interrupting, you're saying a lot here already, and I know you're summarizing the intel that you had presented earlier this week. I know you've got more to add, but I just want to point out the ramifications of what you've already said are that the Air Force is restoring to active duty service potentially thousands of aircraft, combat aircraft of different kinds. You're talking about essentially the economic destruction of the commercial air traffic sector of our economy, which includes package carriers, FedEx and UPS and so on. If all those or half of those pilots are called back into active duty because they were former pilots for the military, then what's going to happen to air traffic also? I mean, that's another question. And then you're talking about all the mechanics and so on, but the run-up to where this is headed, why would the military be doing this? And I know you've talked about that.
That's right, Mike. First of all, if it was a training operation, they may take two or three C-130s out of mothballs, two or three AWACS, maybe a couple of these aircraft, just for training purposes. We're way past training purposes. They're getting ready for World War III, and they've been doing it, we don't know how long, probably for most of this calendar year, maybe half or more of last year, because of the complexity, the length of time, the difficulty getting the parts they need. It's a massive logistical undertaking. It's not something, if you were getting ready for war, you wouldn't do this 3 years or 5 years before they were needed, or even 2 years. I would say 2 years or less is the time frame that they anticipate needing these aircraft. Obviously, the Philippines would be used against China, and obviously Europe against Russia. It's something people need to be aware of, Mike, so they can make their own preparations. It's been widely publicized about all the Chinese men coming to this country illegally across our southern border. Russians have been here for decades. We don't know exactly where they are, what all of them are doing. I've been reporting on it myself, as far as that goes. But there will be saboteurs in this country that we will have to deal with. And of course, the chance of EMP weapons being used as well, at least localized EMP.
Now, can I interject a question here, please? We've already seen with the Ukraine situation, we've seen the U.S. depleting its domestic supplies of artillery rounds and drones and many, many vehicles and so on that have been sent to Ukraine, and some still in progress of being sent there. Most of them now, of course, being rather efficiently destroyed by Russia, by the way. But with this, with these additional aircraft that have been, that were previously mothballed, being readied for active service, and then, as you say, shipped to the Philippines or Europe, then doesn't this further leave CONUS here more vulnerable in case of an invasion, even an internal activation, as I've called it, of the military occupants that have been placed across the United States? How doesn't this make America more vulnerable for its domestic defense?
Well, yes and no. Using high-performance jet aircraft on the United States soil, the lower 48 or even Alaska, it's almost hard to imagine that we would do that because of the absolute nature of the destruction they can cause. Obviously, we need aircraft to do that if necessary, but I hate to think that it would be. The aircraft we already have that are CONUS, which is an acronym for Continental United States, I hope would be adequate, and that they're bringing these aircraft back onto active duty to supplement what's needed overseas. So I can't disagree with your premise, Mike. I just truly hope in my heart that we don't see that kind of action taking place in the United States, and it's definitely a possibility.
Right. I'm wondering if, you know, other guests that I've interviewed have been concerned about things like the communist Chinese establishing an actual beachhead in California, for example, and then landing craft there. I mean, we would hope that the U.S. Navy would do its job and stop that. But these days, who knows what Austin is up to or what Biden is up to? And isn't it possible that our military forces might be ordered to stand down and not defend America?
Well, let's do a little scenario there. First of all, my friend Jeff Nyquist, who I know you know, Jeff, he envisions the most likely scenario, the Norway example. In 1939, hundreds of German soldiers went to Norway pretending to be students and business people, and their uniforms and weapons were already pre-positioned waiting for them to put on when the balloon went up, which of course they did. It's the dream of every general is to have your men already behind enemy lines before the war starts.
Right.
And that's most likely already happened. We don't know how many are here. We don't know what their weapons are. Chinese presence in Mexico, and Nyquist makes the point that there's a cooperative effort right now between the criminal drug cartels in Mexico and the communist Chinese to cooperate to meet mutual goals. The goal of the cartels obviously to make buckets full of money, and the Chinese to do what was said by the Chinese defense minister. The speech is at my website at thelibertyman.com. The speech from the top general, the Chinese defense minister, meant only for other top Chinese military officials, not even for the Chinese people, where he says the goal is to capture the lower 48 and call it Free China and have no Americans present anymore. They intend to kill off all Americans. That's the goal. And everything being put in place would be exactly what would be needed to accomplish that goal, Mike.
Yeah, that's what's extraordinary. And, you know, of course, we have to bring in our audience is aware of the biological weapons that have been deployed already against the United States.
That's right.
Population and its military.
And continue.
Exactly. And it looks like a genocidal operation.
And well, look at where the focus was for the vaccines, the COVID vaccines. Pretty much 100% of the American military received the clot shot, the COVID vaccines. Almost all police officers, almost all firemen, state troopers, almost everybody in the healthcare profession. Everybody you would need in normal times, and everybody would also need if there was a war, have gotten something that is disabling them and killing them. The war is already in motion right now, Mike, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, let's talk about what's happening in Ukraine right this minute, because I noticed the corporate media is not really reporting on this, but it appears that Ukraine has launched at least the opening phase of its so-called counteroffensive, or just a new offensive. And perhaps, I mean, it's been called a probing attack, but from what it looks like to me so far, Ukraine just sent, 100 plus armored vehicles, including many main battle tanks, right into a minefield. And many of them got blown up with mines, many of them hit by, rockets from Russian helicopters. I don't believe automatically, Russia's Ministry of Defense numbers of casualties, so it's probably an exaggeration.
No, it's the first casualty of any war is true.
Yeah, absolutely, right.
And of course, both sides are lying. That's right. That's a given.
Right, but it doesn't look like this is succeeding for Ukraine, is my point.
No, and it's not going to, this battle, if it goes on a week or more, I'd be surprised. It's going to be play itself out in a few days.
Really?
Yeah, this is not World War II. The weapons these people have now are just incredible. And if Russia brings the full force of their military against Ukraine, they'll smash them like a bug. They haven't done that yet, obviously. What they are doing, I think part of the Russian plan, and you mentioned a moment ago, Mike, is to deplete not only U.S. war stocks, but the war stocks of NATO in general,
yes,
which are being dramatically depleted. Some of these countries have refused to sell, and I believe Poland, for example, refused to sell any more artillery shells to this effort. Poland has been the stomping ground for numerous armies for centuries. They have no natural barriers, no mountains or rivers that really can help, or ocean that can help protect Poland. Its armies have marched back and forth across Poland for centuries, and of course the Polish people are very aware of that, and they're also aware that Lech Walesa was a Polish, was a communist agent. And the whole thing was contrived, the alleged freedom of Poland from Russia in 1989-1990. As we frequently hear, the United States and NATO is playing chess, and Russia is playing three-dimensional checkers. The Russians will sacrifice whatever they need to accomplish their goals. For example, blowing up that dam in Ukraine. Yes, it hurt Russians terribly, but it also helped the general war effort of Russia to take out that dam and cut off some of the things Ukraine might have wanted to do if the dam had not been blown up.
So you think that Russia took out that dam?
I think they do. I've heard the analysis of Tucker Carlson. I've heard the analysis of Nyquist. Nyquist analysis makes the most sense. Russians will do what they need to do to win any given war. For example, when the Third Reich was, armies were moving into Russia, they had a scorched earth policy. The Russians, as they retreated, they burned everything that could be used by the Germans. They simply destroyed it. And yes, there was, it harmed the Russian infrastructure, harmed the Russian people, but it helped the war effort. And they were willing to do that, Mike. And I don't think anything's changed.
Okay.
Russians will do what they need to do to win the war that's at hand.
Now, let's contrast that to NATO forces, and specifically the U.S. State Department, where you have people who insist, and also the New York Times and the corporate media, they insist that Russia is a paper tiger, that Russia's on his last legs, that Russia's desperate, that Russian soldier morale is in the tank, and Russia's about to be overrun just any day now, they're sure of it, by the Ukrainian military, which apparently can just throw and lose 20,000 men in a probing attack and not worry about it for some reason. I'm not sure where they keep getting more men.
Well, there's conscription is what there is. Well, my war, the Vietnam War, General Westmoreland gave a speech before a joint session of Congress, which is a highly unusual event, December 1967, where it was his famous light at the end of the tunnel speech, where he said the Viet Cong are defeated on the battlefield. They can no longer mount a major offensive. And we see the light at the end of the tunnel when it comes to this war ending. Well, that was December 1967. Then last week of January 1968, less than 2 months later, the Tet Offensive took place. So that's history. And here we are 50 plus years later, and we have high-level officials basically saying the same thing. Russia's defeated on the battlefield. We're about to run them over. I don't believe it. You know, there's a reason why you can't go to New York City car dealer and buy a new Russian car. You can't go to a New York City shoe store and buy a pair of Russian shoes, or a New York City electronics store and buy a new Russian TV. That's because their manufacturing is focused on building weapons of war. That's what they do, and they do a pretty good job of it.
Yeah, they're experts at that. So, John, are there any more details about the intel of taking aircraft back to active status and any kind of?
Well, I have another private source who lives in that area. He's going to be doing what he can. I think he has limited ability, but he'll be doing what he can. I've known and worked with this guy for more than 10 years also. He may or may not have something to give me an update. I'll be talking to my friend Tom Berryhill, who monitors the ham frequencies. Once again, I'll be talking to him in the next 24 hours to get whatever updates I can. And my original source, I get updates from him as they happen. I don't expect a whole lot to change. The aircraft are being put back into service. They're flying out of the airfield there at Tucson and going to the Philippines and going to Europe. I don't expect a whole lot of updates on that. And if I get them, I'll certainly let you know, Mike.
Yeah, please do. And I used to live in Arizona. I've driven by that Air Force base many times, and I've marveled at the vast quantity of aircraft that are mothballed there, as you say. I mean,
well, from ground level, you can't see very much.
Well, no, but you actually there's a highway on the east side of that base that you know it's a public road that I've driven on, and I can see hundreds of A-10 Warthogs.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's a vast field. I mean, I don't know how many thousands of acres it is, but it's vast. I've driven by it many times.
Massive.
And they have like a white covering on the nose of every aircraft, and they have you know the flight deck is all covered with sun protection cloth or something, whatever it is. But just for our listeners to know, they use that to store aircraft because there's virtually zero humidity there, and so there's no corrosion and there's no rain or almost no rain. And so it's the perfect place to store them than indoors.
It is.
Yeah.
It would be off the charts crazy to try to store that many aircraft indoors. Like I say, Mike, as I get updates, I'll get them to you privately and we can talk more about this.
Okay.
I expect the next step will be to hear about Air Force officers being brought out of retirement and put back on active duty. They have no choice but to do that. They simply don't have enough pilots otherwise, Mike.
So this, we're talking about a call-up, or what's the proper military term, a reactivation of, what are the rules? How old of people can they pull back in?
Except for medical professionals, up to age 60.
Up to age 60?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my. Yeah.
Up to age 60. Now, your typical officer in the Air Force or any branch would retire between 40 and 45 years old, typically going in around age 20. So that's a typical retirement age. So there's thousands of men and women who are retired from the Air Force that could be brought back on active duty.
Yeah. Well, what about a more general draft of just needing more combat soldiers, drafting civilians?
I don't expect a draft for a while. That's not going to help them. And right now, they need trained pilots. They need trained aircraft mechanics. And you can't get that with a draft, at least not very quickly.
Right.
Not at all. It costs about $1 million and takes a year or more to train a pilot. Same thing with these technicians. They're highly trained with specialized tools and specialized knowledge. And you can't do that overnight. It takes probably between a year and a half, to take a youngster off the street and get them to that level of training.
Oh, right. But what about even the supply chain for both the parts and the munitions that would be needed to make these aircraft effective? Because, as you know, the U.S. has lost a lot of manufacturing capability.
Right. Well, we have stocks of inventory. A friend of mine, his job with Boeing was to locate F-15 parts wherever he could find them around the world.
And, really?
Yeah. And he would barter and trade back and forth between aircraft carriers and other places where he could get these parts for high performance jet aircraft. It was a full time job. Just trying to find parts. That will continue and of course get worse.
Well, it looks like the Air Force can't roll out new high-tech 3D printers fast enough, right? I mean, and the problem is, you know, you probably played with 3D printers. I have. You can't make high-performance turbine parts on a 3D printer. They'll just shatter.
No, they don't have the strength, not yet.
They don't, no.
Now, my factory where we build liberated rocket heaters, I saw two 3D printers working yesterday, but they can't do that kind of technology, no.
No, not yet. I mean, I know they're working on it, but it's...
Not that we know of.
Yeah, it's a ways away. They talk about 3D printed guns too, they're good for one round because the chamber gets all blasted apart from the pressure, you know.
Well, actually, the ones made out of metal, I think, can be used almost indefinitely, the plastic ones.
Well, no, I hear you. Yeah, the metal ones. But I'm talking about the typical, like sort of the polymer-based nylon. A lot of people print 3D printers with nylon, and even that can't handle the pressures.
No, it's incredible pressures there.
Yeah.
But the 3D printers that print with metal, that's a whole different story.
Yeah, but, they still have that layer, the layer to layer strength. They can delaminate quite easily.
Well, what they're doing is their Ghost Gunner does this. I guess they're still in business. They do the receivers, and the receivers don't take that kind of pressure. And that's everything else can be bought over the counter, except the receiver.
Yeah, but that's just a milling. That's a milling machine, right? So they're just milling out a block of aluminum, as I understand it.
Right. Right.
So it's still straight aluminum when you're done.
But it doesn't have the pressure. So
right. I hear you.
It's kind of a rabbit trail from what we were talking about.
Yeah, sorry. I didn't mean to get off topic. Yeah.
That's okay.
Okay. All right. But getting back to the main topic then, in your estimation, how concerned should the American people be about actual declared world war in the next 6 to 18 months.
War may never be declared, but I want to go back to a comment you made a moment ago.
Yeah.
This has to do, the President of the United States is in the pocket of the Communist Chinese. There's lots of really hard evidence of that. I can easily imagine a scenario where a nuke may be set off or the threat of a nuke being set off inside the United States, and President Biden says in order to save lives and property, he has no choice but to meet the terms and conditions of the Communist Chinese because of what's taking place. Maybe some kind of battle might take place where maybe an aircraft carrier task force is sunk to the bottom of the ocean. We hear about the hypersonic missiles that can go five times the speed of sound. What we don't hear very much about is torpedoes that can go 100 miles an hour. It may not sound like very fast, but it's fast enough that an aircraft carrier can't get out of the way.
Right.
So they have both. They have cavitating torpedoes that can go 100 miles an hour, the missiles that can go five times the speed of sound. We only hope we have, and it's highly classified, is the possibility of space-based weapons that could take down these missiles. My friend Dr. Deagle says they exist. I don't know. I hope they do. But then there's other countermeasures for that, where there's space-based weapons the Chinese have that basically shoot out what amounts to a load of buckshot that can take out anything in space. So there's a lot of complexity here, Mike. And as for our audience, I would say, first of all, it's a spiritual war, ultimately, to get your spiritual house in order. And God expects you to do what you can for you and your family. Have water, have food, have a safe haven, have a way to defend the family against both criminals and enemy combatants. That's God's expectation for everybody, I believe, don't you, Mike?
Yeah, I do as well. And I know you're in the Ozarks. You talk about it publicly.
I do.
And I think that's a very wise place to be. You've chosen a great spot. There are a few such spots across America, but you happy with where you are?
I'm very happy. The Arkansas-Missouri Ozarks is tens of thousands of square miles. It's bigger than many states. It's bigger than several states together back in the Northeast. One county alone in Missouri, Texas County, is only 300 square miles less than the entire state of Rhode Island, for example.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's a vast area with lots of all the water you'd ever want. We have more bridges in the Missouri Ozarks than any state in the country. Lots of springs. I personally own a spring that puts out 1 million gallons a day.
A day?
A day. A million gallons. That's measured by the state, by the way.
Wow.
A very relatively short, relatively mild winter, a very homogeneous population, and a very low population density. So it has a lot going for it. The men and women here, the indigenous population, typically boys and girls harvest their first deer around 8 to 10 years old. That's common. If a boy has a rifle in his pickup truck on the high school parking lot and a principal finds out, he'll just ask the student if it's properly sighted in and may want to buy it for himself. there's no penalties for having a rifle in a locked vehicle on a parking lot of a high school around here. It simply doesn't exist. It's a whole different culture, Mike, and a whole different mindset.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's really more of what America has been until it was perverted by, you know, all the current influences. But I just wonder, people don't seem to take it as realistic that we could end up in a world war before Christmas, even, you know, conceivably. And what might happen to elections, right? So 2024 election,
I guess. Well, if open warfare, if there's an election at all, it would be limited. I expect it would just be postponed, quite frankly.
Right. So couldn't this be a mechanism used by the regime to avoid, you know, losing power?
It would be a secondary benefit for them, not a primary goal, but they would certainly use it to their advantage. Of course they would.
Right. And well, and also we have, would you agree that we have people such as Victoria Nuland at the State Department that appear to be emotionally invested in the ethnic cleansing of people of Russian descent, rather than thinking about what is best for the American people and their lives?
I agree. And what happens in pretty much every war is demonization of the enemy. You know, the men and women who run Russia, they're Caucasians. You know, they're Slavic Caucasians. There's lots of Slavic Caucasians in the United States. Demonizing them is demonizing Americans, quite frankly. But we see this in every war. And, you know, My parents were the World War II generation, and it carried over well past World War II. The demonization of the Japanese people, beautiful, intelligent people, productive people, but the propaganda of World War II, my mother held dear to her heart until she died, her beliefs about the defective nature of the Asian people in general. So we see that in every war, where the demonization of the enemy is part of the program, Mike.
But it seems like today, this demonization that you're referring to is targeting domestically. We're seeing a demonization of white people, in particular in the education system, in media, culture.
It's a culture war.
Right.
And the people behind that is the Politburo of Russia and the Politburo of China. It's a decades-long effort to split and balkanize the United States into various factions that don't trust each other, that hate each other, and are having quite a bit of success. You know, homosexuals in any given country is about 3% of the population. Those that are transsexual is a even smaller, tiny percentage of that 3%. And the way they're promoting this, you would think that it's a large percentage of population that is part of that whole movement, which is It's absurd. It's absolutely absurd. But they're doing it, and they're paying a price for it. Anheuser-Busch may very well go out of business before the year is over. Same thing with Target. You can't lose $1 billion a day of value and stay in business very long. But that's what's happening to Target, and that's what's happening to Anheuser-Busch. And I say good riddance.
I don't know which branch of the military it was, but one branch of the military just put out, it might have been the Army, just put out an LGBT flag and a soldier saluting the flag, the LGBT flag.
No, rather, yeah. That is so disappointing.
Oh, no, there's, in fact, Paul Joseph Watson just did a story about this on Summit. Here it is. Celebrate Pride Month. Oh, here it is. It's the Air Force. Oh, my goodness.
Right.
And by the way, some of these colors in this flag, my understanding is they also represent groomers and pedophiles and so on. So now you have an Air Force soldier here saluting pedophiles.
Well, back when I was in the Army, I knew some homosexual soldiers. They tried their best to not appear to be homosexual, to act normal to the best of their ability, some better than others. They did not want anybody to know that that was their sexual preference. And they wanted to get a honorable discharge so they can move on with their life and whatever their private life was. That's all changed. We now have this woman, this man, Levine,
Rachel, so-called Rachel, yeah.
This man who dresses up in the U.S. Navy Admiral's uniform and goes to international conferences representing the United States of America. How humiliating.
Yeah.
How absolutely humiliating.
Well, the rest of the world is laughing at us, and it's a,
you know. Of course they are, and they should.
I mean, yeah, he wears high heels and lipstick and pretends to be a woman. It's a horrifying projection of perversion.
If we want to go on that rabbit trail just a bit more, we have graduates of respected medical schools from Stanford and Harvard telling children, pre-puberty children, that they can be a boy can become a girl, that a girl can become a boy, knowing full well that the chromosomes of a boy will always be the chromosomes of a boy. Right. The chromosomes of a girl will always be the chromosomes of a girl. That can't be changed by drugs or surgery. It simply can't. But these little children who are pre-puberty or even teenagers, they don't know any better. They think a boy can actually become a girl, and are told, and their parents are told by healthcare professionals that that can be done. They can mutilate boys and girls. They can screw them up the rest of their lives with these harmful drugs, but they can't make a boy a girl, and they can't make a girl a boy. It simply can't be done. It's absolute lies. It's criminal. It's genital mutilation. And I know just yesterday, my governor in Missouri signed two bills. One prevents boys from competing in girls' athletics in the public schools.
Yay.
And I believe college, I'm not sure. And also prohibits and makes illegal mutilating the genitals of a adolescent of a boy or girl under the age of 18. They can't. It's a now a as of yesterday. It's a crime in the state of Missouri, which I'm glad it is.
And you know, a similar bill has passed in Texas and in other states. I think Louisiana and some of these have been overturned by courts. It's currently, you know, in the court system. But you realize that ultimately the United States of America is going to be turned into a fractured nation where there are states where it's illegal to mutilate children. And then there will be states like California, Oregon, Washington, and so on, where it's perfectly legal and accepted to mutilate children.
Well, California's passed that. They're become a sanctuary state for children from other states.
Right.
To have their genitals mutilated, even if the parents don't want. And they will, California will give sanctuary to these children, mutilate their genitals, change their lives in all these horrible ways forever. And that needs to end. It simply needs to end. I don't see anything happening at the federal level as long as the communists are in charge of the Senate and we have a communist in charge of the executive branch, Joe Biden. I don't see any hope until that changes, Mike.
But isn't this one of the plans by the communists in charge is to destroy the United States population through various means, abortion, genital mutilations, also infertility jabs, which is the COVID jab, and of course, just
killing
people.
It's all part of the plan. It's all part of the plan. None of this is happenstance. None of this is happening on its own accord.
And
it's all part of a carefully contrived plan, Mike.
Completely agree. And let me add, New York City Mayor Eric Adams is now suggesting that residents of New York City take in illegal aliens to occupy their homes.
Didn't we go through this in 1775, 1774?
When British soldiers were
being housed in American citizens' homes?
Right.
And wasn't that one of the reasons we fought the Revolutionary War?
I believe it was. And that's the Third Amendment right there, too, actually, right?
Exactly.
Shall not quarter the soldiers in your homes. But this is about to happen in New York. And why are people so gullible to think that this illegal won't just come into their home, murder the homeowner, and just take the home? Because there would be no repercussions for them doing that, because illegals seem to have legal immunity in New York City, by the way.
And many other sanctuary cities.
Right. Never be prosecuted.
Roger that. I can see, let's take, for example, a family in Nebraska, their teenager who wants to become the opposite sex, somehow manages to get to California without the parents' consent. And so in a sanctuary state, the parents find out where the child is. I can see the parents of a wealthy family hiring private contractors to covertly go to California, seize that child, and bring them back safely to Nebraska. I can easily see that happen. How about you, Mike?
Well, and exactly. That's the kind of mission that people that I know and have trained with, and that you know and have trained with, or that you have trained, actually. The people I know ran those missions in Afghanistan and in Syria.
Right.
And they were extracting relatives of senators and people like that, and it's an extraction mission. I can see contractor extraction out of California taking place, yes.
Well, one team I worked with, they did extract two youngsters that were in a cult. They took them to a cabin where they were spent a month eating a high-protein diet. For the next 10 years, these two youngsters, as young adults, sent the team a Christmas card every year thanking them.
Oh, really?
I've personally transported troubled teens across state lines from the parents' home to private Christian boarding schools. And only one boy we had to use handcuffs on, but, I've been part of missions like that. And, I can easily see these things happen because, parents will do what they need to protect their children. And if it involves hiring private contractors, they'll do it.
So we have hospitals that are mutilating children for profit in states like California. These hospitals are engaged in medical kidnapping. At least this is my understanding of how this is going to work. So children can be actually taken, or let's say the state can prevent parents from taking their children out of these mutilation centers, right? So
right.
This is medical kidnapping to carry out felony violence against a child. Now it brings up the question, wouldn't a parent, or frankly, what about this scenario? What about like Texas Rangers? What about a law enforcement agency from another state sending in a squad to go in and rescue that child from medical violence, even if they have to even raid the hospital and extract that human being? I mean, you know, isn't this going to happen at some point?
Well, that's another level of complication. Once that Texas Ranger leaves the state of Texas, he no longer has the authority of a police officer. That's gone. He's just a private citizen.
With special skills.
With special skills. I think it's more likely that the parents or usually the grandparents are where the money is. People that had the money would hire private contractors. Now, when I crossed state lines to transport these teenagers, I had a power of attorney where I had the full legal authority. Same as the parent, to have these youngsters in my custody. When I transported a boy, I had a male assistant, is what I meant to say. When I transported a young lady, I had a female assistant. I was no way I was going to be alone with a female teenager.
Understood.
That simply
right.
wasn't going to happen. But when I would go through the airport security checkpoints, this one young man in San Francisco, I had him in handcuffs. As soon as they saw the paperwork, they couldn't be kinder and more helpful to help me get this child back to Missouri.
Right.
Now, in this case, it would have to be completely covert, where there would be a private aircraft at a private airport waiting to transport the child out of California back to Kansas, Nebraska, Missouri, wherever they're being taken to, by the private contractors. It would be risky business. It would be dangerous business. But I do see that kind of thing happening, Mike, because to keep a child from being permanently mutilated and disfigured for the rest of their life, I can see parents taking that risk, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And then
be undone. You know, right. We have a legal system that can undo most things, usually with money and time. But the mutilation of a child can't be undone. It's permanent.
That's right. Yeah. Well, and that's why it's being pushed so aggressively. But this gets us into a bigger question here. You know, it seems like America is fractured, and that it's splitting apart. It's a national divorce, as it's been called, happening. I mean, again, you have states with tech giants in them that are pro-censorship, and then you Right. have states that are anti-censorship, like Missouri, which is leading the charge on this, by the way, and also Texas and others. But you're going to have states, I'm going to just call them, you know, free states, which are going to be like Missouri and Texas, states where you have the freedom to speak, where you have the freedom to share information, where your children aren't going to be targeted by genital mutilators and so on. And then you're going to have the liberal states, the Democrat states, which will be collapsed, dystopian, you know, crap holes of just filth and disease and economic collapse and violence and everything you can imagine. It's happening.
It is happening. And the numbers bear that out. Usually the numbers say the people living in California is just a number. What's usually not reported is, who are these people? The overwhelming majority of them are the productive people between 20 and 60 years old, frequently business owners who create jobs. That's who's leaving. The productive people that are educated, motivated, want to have a good life and enjoy the proceeds of what they do for their working life. And when you have business owners leaving any state, and the numbers they're leaving, you're in big trouble because of the tax revenue they generate, the jobs they generate, the stability they bring to the communities they're leaving. You're in really big trouble. And that's what's happening in California, Illinois, New York, other places where these draconian laws, draconian levels of taxation are driving out the productive people who say, I've had enough. I'm going to Texas. I'm going to Missouri. I'm going to Florida. I'm getting the hell out of Dodge. And it's really hurting California. It's really hurting Illinois. I'm not so sure about New York. I'm sure there's some distress there as a consequence. But 10 years of that would destroy the tax base and the revenue base of these states, don't you think, Mike?
Well, yeah, we're already seeing it. Illinois is in tremendous financial trouble. I saw a story the other day, too, about record demand for cleanup crews to clean up buildings and apartments after people flee. I mean, people are literally fleeing Illinois, Chicago in particular, almost as if they're economic refugees, just getting out while they can. I mean, it kind of reminds me of the run-up to World War II and people fleeing Poland, you know, to escape what was coming for them from the Third Reich and so on. I mean, people are getting out of these jurisdictions that are becoming lawless, violent hellholes of economic collapse, and also, you know, the targeting of their children. And eventually, I think it's going to come to a point, John, where they don't even care if they can sell their home. Right now, a lot of people are trying to sell a house and then get out in a kind of organized fashion. Right. But I think the day is coming where they're like, forget it. We have to leave now while we can.
I can see that happening in Cook County first. If you're a highly productive professional, lawyer, accountant, medical doctor who has a good income potential, you can afford to take that hit to get your family to a safe haven. Of course you can.
Right.
And most likely that's already happening, where people will take a financial hit to sell the house quickly, just to get out of Dodge.
That's right.
And I'm pretty sure that's already taking place, Mike.
It is. And the other thing to keep in mind, John, I know you've covered this, is that the commercial properties are very...
Oh, they're in trouble. Oh, it didn't matter where you are. Red state, blue state, and that's COVID right there.
Well, right. But think about it. The biggest cities in America are in the blue states.
That's right.
Right? And those cities are made up of primarily commercial properties, and those properties provide a tax-based revenue to the local counties and the cities and the states. And those are at 50% occupancy right now.
Past tense. Used to.
Yeah, provide. Used to. Right. Exactly. I mean, the commercial real estate collapse that's coming is going to gut these.
Commercial real estate used to be one of the most solid, safest investments that a person could make.
That's right.
Yeah, that's over. That's finished.
Clearly. You know,
That's a consequence. I'm sorry for the people who got their money invested in that, but these companies found out that with COVID that they didn't need the expensive office space in downtown Chicago, New York, wherever it might be, Los Angeles, that they could have productive employees and not have all that expensive office space. And that continues to this day, doesn't it?
Well, yes, and plus a lot of corporations are leaving these jurisdictions as well. We're seeing not only retail outlets shutting down in places like San Francisco and Los Angeles and even Seattle, but entire companies moving out because it's not even safe enough for their own employees to come to work without being accosted or assaulted on the streets just coming to work.
Well, that's a shame, but that's reality, Mike. And if they want to come to Missouri, we'll find space for them. They want to come from Texas, I'm sure you'll find space for them where there's safety, lower taxes, agreeable people, no miles and miles of homeless people occupying tents in the parks and so forth.
Right.
There's still some beautiful places in the United States that these companies can move to and have the kind of life for themselves and their employees that they want to have, isn't there?
Yeah. That's right. Well, and Missouri is a destination to consider, especially the area where you are. I wouldn't want to live in Kansas City because it's being overrun by woke.
Kansas City and St. Louis are taken over by the communists.
That's right.
That's an unfortunate fact of life. And they just stay there and we stay where we are. We leave them alone. They leave us alone.
And sometimes you meet in the middle at Jeff City. Is that right?
I'll be in Columbia, Missouri, Saturday morning running the 100-meter dash, by the way.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, no, I'm just 2 months away from my birthday number 76. And I'll be running the 100-meter dash Saturday morning.
Good for you.
At Battle High School at 9 o'clock in the morning.
I was listening to your show. I heard you had a meetup recently in Rolla, Missouri.
That's right. That's the first Thursday every month. And it's at the... Benton Square building at an Italian restaurant there. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, that's great. That's fantastic. I want to give out your website for people to follow you. It's thelibertyman.com. I have it here. And John, tell us about your daily broadcast as well.
Well, it's Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 a.m. Central Time. We have a regular retinue of guests. Monday, we have Firearms Monday with Sam Andrews, who trains active-duty Marine snipers, active-duty Army snipers, and civilians who want to take his classes, as well as Navy SEALs who take the tactical classes. Tuesday, we have the Tuesday Morning Roundtable with Jeff Nyquist, my friend Steve Benoon, who was a former CIA field agent, and Dave Hodges. Fascinating discussions. Wednesday, we have my friend Professor McKinney, the author of 12 books, amateur archaeologist. He taught mathematics at Cornell University. He taught astrophysics at Cornell University. And Nyquist gets another hour. Thursdays, we have Dr. Lynn Horowitz, who's the author of 12 books and warned us about viruses 20 plus years ago. Thank you, Dr. Horowitz. Fridays, I have a new scientist beginning a week from tomorrow. She's done really excellent work. She's a coroner in Texas County, Missouri. And she's been really good at documenting what's really killing people. And she's the author of 3 books herself, numerous peer-reviewed papers. And I'm really pleased. I just met with her yesterday that she agreed to have that take on that time slot. So that's my regular Monday through Friday list of guests there, Mike.
Okay. Wow. That's excellent. I didn't realize you had J.R. Nyquist on every Tuesday. I want to show Your videos are also, you have a channel on Brighteon.com. It's called The Liberty Man, as you might guess, or The John Moore Show. And so you have your episodes there.
I've been interviewing Nyquist for 20 years. I started interviewing Steve Quayle in the late 1990s.
That's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Nyquist is, I got to have him back on because he's got, he's such a great researcher and he's got a vast amount of knowledge.
When Trump was president, I told everybody Nyquist should have a workstation in the West Wing of the White House.
Yeah.
Seriously, when it comes to understanding international communist conspiracy, there's very few that have his knowledge.
Yeah, that's right. And by the way, I want to ask you before we wrap this up, speaking of Trump and the presidency and so on, and I only have a couple minutes left here too. I know you got to go, but what do you think about RFK Jr.?
I support him on almost everything. I mean, he believes that human beings can change the climate, unfortunately. But when it comes to every other major matter, he's right on target. He's the guy, as far as I'm concerned. President Trump really needs to come clean on COVID vaccines.
Yes.
He still supports them publicly. Mike, there was only one PAC that had a brick and mortar office for President Trump in 2027, just before he was elected. I was asked to take over that PAC, and I was ready to do so before the last election. COVID kind of knocked that in the ground. But I was involved at a pretty high level with President Trump to help him. But I can't do that. He continues to support the worst crime in recorded human history, that being the COVID vaccines. I've worked with men like him. You probably have too. His style of leadership is my way or the highway. He cannot, very difficult for him, almost impossible to admit he was wrong on anything.
Yeah.
Wrong on ordering the wrong dessert. I mean, anything at all, he can't admit that he was wrong. That's a unique part of his personality. But until he comes clean, was he threatened? His family members, his children threatened to support COVID vaccine? What, did he do it out of ignorance? Does he really support it? I don't know. All I know is what's going on publicly, which he publicly supports it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I can't tolerate that.
I can't tolerate it.
I'm right there with you.
I can't be part of it.
Yep. That's my issue with Trump as well. So it's going to be interesting to see where this goes. I mean, you know, I disagree with RFK on the carbon dioxide. You know, CO2 is a molecule that's critical for life on our planet.
It is. We can't live without CO2. It's critical for animal
absolutely.
Life, plant life, human
and
life.
Food crops. We've got to have food crops. But the thing about RFK is he's an honest person of integrity, and he's well informed about almost every issue, and he deeply cares about America. And at this point, you know, we've got to get Biden and the communists out of power.
That's right.
You know, frankly, almost anyone would be better than them. But
yeah,
but,
well, I'm concerned about DeSantis and who he's connected to. He's right on most of the issues. He's a bit immature, I think, for that level of leadership.
Who? Who are you talking about?
Ron DeSantis.
Oh, DeSantis. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe in another cycle. I'd like to see him stay governor of Florida, finish out his term, maybe one more term, and maybe then run for president.
Yeah.
But when the Bushes fully support DeSantis, that's an issue.
right.
And, you know, it's something. I think he may be just a bit naive about the way the world works and who should be supporting him and who he accepts support from. Mr. Kennedy is probably the best candidate that we have. I don't see the U.S. Senator, U.S. House going along with the CO2 nonsense. I really don't.
Right.
So maybe that's our saving grace there if he would get elected president, which the Democrats are going to fight him and tooth and nail as far as that goes.
That's true. All right. Well, we're going to wrap this up today. This has been a fascinating discussion. We really appreciate your time, John. Thank you for joining
us. Anytime, Mike. When you're ready, we'll do it again.
Okay, sounds good. And okay. Have a wonderful day, and thank you for joining us here. And for those watching, again, John Moore's website is thelibertyman.com. And he's also got a channel here on Brighteon.
That's right.
Let me show you his, where is it? Nope, oops, that's not it. this, here it is. John Moore,
thank
the Liberty
you,
Man. No, that I had that up from before. There it is. That's not John Moore. This is John Moore on the motorcycle. Yes. Okay. With the American flag. All right.
Okay, Mike. Thank you.
Thanks. Talk soon. Thank you. Okay, take care. And for those watching, feel free to share this interview. You can repost it on other platforms. You always have our permission. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighttown.com. Thanks for watching today. God bless you all. God bless America. Take care. Today's interview is brought to you by the wonderful folks at the Satellite Phone Store. SAT123 gets you there. And they make satellite phones affordable. Everybody needs them. 50 U.S. senators now have satellite phones just like these. They've got Inmarsat as well as Iridium phones, very affordable on a monthly plan that includes minutes that roll over. And you can also do two-way satellite text messaging with the Bivy sticks here. They have packages with solar generators, solar panels, Faraday bags, Bivy sticks, and so much more. You can even get big systems here where you can power a lot and store a lot of energy. Check it all out at the Satellite Phone Store, SAT123.com. Get ready, because, of course, the media is already talking about solar flares, EMP, and grid down scenarios. I wonder what they have planned. A little predictive programming being pushed out there, it seems. So get ready now while you can. And thanks for supporting our sponsors.
A global reset is coming. And that's why I've recorded a new 9-hour audiobook. It's called The Global Reset Survival Guide. You can download it for free by subscribing to the naturalnews.com email newsletter, which is also free. I'll describe how the monetary system fails. I also cover emergency medicine and first aid and what to buy to help you avoid infections. So download this guide. It's free. It's my gift to you simply because I want like-minded people to survive.